Is it 29 today? We don't have it on the board, so you don't normally have repetition on the evening classes? Or?
No.
Just wait, okay. Vepatuscha sharire me romaharshascha jayate gandivam shramsate hastat tvakchvaiva paridahyate. Vepatu, trembling of the body, cha, also, sharire, on the body, me, mine, roma harshaha, standing of hair on end, cha, also, jayate, is taking place, gandivam, the bow of Arjuna, shramsate, is slipping, hastat, from the hand, tvak, skin, cha, also, eva, certainly, paridahyate, is burning. For the audience on the internet, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, text 29. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My whole body is trembling. My hair is standing on end. My bow, Gandiva, is slipping from my hand, and my skin is burning. Purport. There are two kinds of trembling of the body and two kinds of standing of hair on end. Such phenomena occur either in great spiritual ecstasy or out of great fear under material conditions. There is no fear in transcendental realization. Arjuna's symptoms in this situation are out of material fear, namely loss of life. This is evident from other symptoms also. He became so impatient that his famous bow, Gandiva, was slipping from his hands. And because his heart was burning within him, he was feeling a burning sensation of the skin. All these are due to a material conception of life. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport to text 29 of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, titled Observing the Armies. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swaminiti Namine Nama Acharya Padaya Nitai Kripa Pradayine Gaurakata Dhamadaya Nagara Gramatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Gopi Pranadana Dase Iti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadhadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Giram Yatkripatamaham bande Shri Guru Dhanatarinam. Yatkripatamaham bande Paramananda Madhavam. Shri Chaitanya Ishwaram. Katanchana smrite yasmin Dushkaram shakaram bhave Vismrite viparitam syat Shri Chaitanyam Namamidham. So now, in this particular verse, we observe that Arjuna is showing symptoms of fear. And in the previous purport, Prabhupada had explained, any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods. Whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualifications by education and culture, lacks in godly qualities. As such, Arjuna, just after seeing his kinsmen, friends and relatives on the battlefield, was at once overwhelmed by compassion for them who had so decided to fight among themselves. As far as the soldiers were concerned, he was sympathetic from the beginning, but he felt compassion even for the soldiers of the opposing party, foreseeing their imminent death. And while he was so thinking, the limbs of his body began to quiver and his mouth became dry. He was more or less astonished to see their fighting spirit. Practically, the whole community, all blood relatives of Arjuna, had come to fight with him. This overwhelmed a kind devotee like Arjuna. So, Prabhupada explains that that Arjuna's fear is out of his godly qualities, that he is not afraid of losing the battle. So generally, fear comes when we are afraid of losing something. Something, I mean, especially in the modern world, this fear is generally out of one's own selfishness, that I want something. So, Arjuna was not particularly interested in winning a kingdom at the loss of all these great saintly people like Bhishma, Dronacharya, who were his grandfathers and teachers, and his own brothers. So Arjuna, Prabhupada explains that this is the nature of a devotee. He's considerate of other people. So Arjuna was not so much concerned whether he's going to lose the battle. So the fear is not, am I going to lose this battle? It's a different kind of a fear. The fear is, people, they're all my blood relatives, and look at this fighting spirit. And I'm going to fight with them and kill all of them. What kind of war is this? That was Arjuna's concern. So that's why Prabhupada explains, any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods. Whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualification, by education, culture, lacks in godly qualities. So this is an exhibition of Arjuna's saintly qualities. That's from one perspective. But later on, Arjuna, he experiences these symptoms and all these things. So later on, when Krishna speaks, you'll notice that Krishna actually chastises Arjuna. Krishna says that although you're a learned man and you're speaking learned words, you're grieving for something that is not worthy of grief. You're a fool, Krishna tells Arjuna. So from the common perspective of society, Arjuna's concern is definitely godly. It's a legitimate concern, it's a very ethical concern. But from the higher perspective of spiritual realities, Krishna calls Arjuna a fool. And so let's try to understand what exactly is happening here. And Prabhupada explains this in this purport. Why do we say, why does Krishna call Arjuna a fool? Of course, before we get into an explanation of that, I want to just clarify that Prabhupada explains very clearly that Arjuna is not an ordinary person. Arjuna is an eternal associate of the Lord. And being an eternal associate of the Lord, he cannot be overcome by these kind of situations. But because Krishna put him into such a situation, therefore we see this. It's a pastime. So that the common man can understand and learn spiritual knowledge from this context. So Prabhupada clearly explains that Arjuna is an eternal associate of the Lord. He was deliberately put into this situation by Krishna for the benefit of the whole world. So here, what kind of, Prabhupada explains that the kind of feelings that, the kind of experience that Arjuna is going through is due to material conception of life. And so you can see body is trembling, hair is standing on end, Gandiva is slipping from his hand. Now, to understand the gravity of this kind of a situation, let's try to recollect that Arjuna is famous as the wielder of this Gandiva bow. And that's, I mean, he's, when you say Gandiva bow, people identify it with Arjuna. I mean, the object is so much identified with Arjuna. And Arjuna is so much distraught, he's not even able to hold that Gandiva. It's like that is, the, I mean, the very bow Gandiva is identified with Arjuna. And he's not even able to hold that bow. So in a modern equivalent, if you imagine a sports player, of, like we just had, the World Cup football now. And I've never followed football at any point in my life, so I don't know who the players are. But I do know what the game is about. So imagine that if the leading player, if he suddenly says, and the whole world is looking at him and it's a World Cup final, and if he suddenly says, I cannot kick the ball, I cannot even kick the ball. I mean, kicking the ball is something which even a child can do. Of course, if he just says, I cannot kick the ball, I mean, the whole world would be in shock. This is just to give you an idea of the kind of situation that Arjuna is going through. I mean, it is something which shocked the entire assembly who were there. Of course, not everybody was, I mean, you could say the whole world was not watching, but even at least the whole battlefield of Kurukshetra was hundreds and thousands of people. So it is something which is shocking that is unfolding on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And let's try to understand this a little bit further. What is the material conception of life that Arjuna is enveloped into here? He, Prabhupada explains that Krishna, in fact, explains later on in the Bhagavad Gita that from attachment, lust arises, and when lust is not fulfilled, anger arises. And there's a whole sequence. Finally, you fall down into the material whirlpool. So, the kind of attachment that Arjuna is going on here, there is this whole concept of material life, of love, as Prabhupada explains, love, family, society. So Arjuna is not really concerned whether he's going to win the war or not, because he explains to Krishna, even if I win this war, I may have great opulence, I may have great power, but all these people are not going to be there, so how am I going to enjoy? Anyway, what is the big deal of this war? So there is this whole concept of attachment to this love, I mean the family, society, and when that is threatened, that is causing the fear. And I think all of us can relate to that. the whole material world revolves around this concept. It is called, the material world is called Kunta, a place of anxiety, whereas Vaikunta means a place of no anxiety. And what is this anxiety due to? And in the Vedic tradition, we always notice they don't give any importance to temporary things. So the whole Vedic concept of life is whatever is temporary is not of value. Whatever is permanent is of value. The whole Vedic civilization is based on that concept. Whereas the whole modern civilization is whatever is nice is of value. So that is the difference in conception between the Vedic civilization and the modern civilization. The Vedic civilization does not care how nice something may be. If it's temporary, no value. So that's a whole different dimension. There's a whole different way, a whole different way of looking at the world, which is actually the real way of looking at the world. Because if something is temporary, it's going to be finished. And when it's going to be finished, you're going to be distressful. You're attached to something which is temporary, and when it is taken away, definitely you're going to experience this. That's what is happening with Arjuna. Prabhupada explains, Arjuna's symptoms in this situation are out of material fear, namely loss of life, this material body. So people are going to die. So he's concerned about this whole concept of people are going to die. And he likes those people. He's attached to those people. And if they're going to die, then what happens to this whole family, love and society? So the Vedic civilization begins with it. That's why we find that later on in the next chapter, Krishna begins with this first things first, as they say. He says, first of all, you're not the body. So what is there to be lamenting about? You begin to lament when you're attached to something which is temporary. So the Bhagavad Gita is a very, very sequential study of how sequentially takes you. Okay, you're now attached to the body. Krishna explains to Arjuna. Then he explains what you should actually be attached to. It is a soul. Slowly he teaches that you should be worried about things which are permanent. Don't be so much worried about things which are temporary. And like that. So slowly the progression comes in. What is the soul? So if you are not the body, then what are you? You're a spirit soul. And if you are a spirit soul, what is your activity? What are you supposed to do? And then Krishna explains, you are a spirit soul. Mamaivam Shajiva Loke, you are a part of me. And your natural position is to serve me. And so if you do that activity, you'll be pleased. So the whole teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, the whole Vedic civilization is trying to make us turn our face, turn our attention towards that which is permanent. And so sometimes we hear this complaint that you people who are interested in spiritual life, you're not so much concerned about worldly affairs, you're not concerned about the sufferings of people. I mean, at least externally from their point of view, they think that we are actually selfish. That we are not thinking about the poverty in the world today, malnutrition, all these different issues that people are concerned about. So they think that we are irresponsible, we don't think about these things. But our concept is different. We look at it from a different perspective. For example, just like in an ordinary material family. So let's say even in the Western world, in good families, and I've heard that there's this good family spirit that Giriraj Maharaj, for example, in his book explains how they were very closely bonded family. So in a closely bonded family, it is considered very abominable. Let's say if one child goes away from home and is not connected with the family, not connected with the parents, and is doing his own thing. Especially in India, this is very, very considered very abominable, that once you grow up, you have a debt towards the people who have raised you, your parents. So then if you neglect them, it is considered very bad. And normally if that happens, what the reaction would be, that other members of the family, they don't give much importance to you. I mean, you're sidelined by everybody else. You'd be labeled, this person is very selfish. He doesn't think about our dad and mom, and he's just leading his own life, he or she, whatever. So then you're sidelined by the other members of the family. So that's a natural thing in this material world. Why? Because you know that, because they know that this person is selfish. He's not thinking about the whole thing, okay, it is the parents who gave him money for education, who brought him up and all these things. So spiritual life is understanding of spiritual realities. And what is the spiritual reality? Spiritual reality means we are a part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is the supreme person. And as Prabhupada explained, Krishna has provided us for all our necessities. He's given us everything. He's the supreme father, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. So this is the actual reality. So when you find that people do not want to acknowledge this reality, they want to lead their own life, then we are not so much interested about them. Interested about them in terms of, we are interested in mixing with them and socializing with them. But we are interested in trying to make them understand, please, you are a spirit soul, you are a part and parcel of Krishna, just try to love Krishna. So that is our real interest. So it is not that we are anti-socials, but rather we are not interested in mixing with people who are selfish. We want to elevate people to the state of higher consciousness. Higher consciousness. So then when you begin to love Krishna, when you understand that you are a permanent spirit soul, and Krishna is also a permanent spirit soul, and he's a supreme permanent spirit soul, and you are a part and parcel of Krishna, and here it is your duty to serve him. And we're trying to bring people to this state of understanding. And it is the only state of understanding where you can be free from all anxiety. Because as Prabhupada explains, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita also, every other plan making is destined to fail. Simply because it is based on this false concept of all depending on the temporary. We are supposed to depend only on the permanent. So we want permanent love. We want permanent society. We want permanent friendships. That is our interest. It is not that we are antisocials, but we are perfectionists. We are connoisseurs of love, friendship and society. We want the highest love. We want the highest friendship. We want the highest family. So we are very much, we are more interested in these things than what the materialists are interested, are capable of being interested also. Because Krishna's whole purpose in coming to this material world and teaching the Bhagavad Gita, his final instruction, Sarva Dharman Paritejya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshasyami Ma Suchah. So he's saying, forget all these different things you're doing, just surrender unto me. Come and lead a life of, as Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, one of our senior members, he wrote a book called Endless Love. So that is what Krishna is inviting us to enjoy forever, the delights of an endless love. And our acharyas have explained that this whole process has been made so simple by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And who else but a fool would not accept this? And Prabhupada, in his introduction to teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he explains that the life of Lord Chaitanya is a practical demonstration of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And if we notice the life of the followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we notice that their life is full of ecstasy. In fact, I remember there was one friend of mine when I took to Krishna consciousness who said, I can't relate to Lord Chaitanya. I asked him why. He said, he's so abnormal. He's always in trance, he's dancing, and he looks very, very abnormal. You know, so people are so conditioned to the concept of pain, suffering and so-called normality, they cannot even relate to the state of extreme happiness. And so they think that if you follow the process of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you become dysfunctional. I mean, they have that concept of dysfunctional, paralyzed by joy. But I think that's a good kind of paralysis. paralysis by joy. But we also notice that it is not that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers are paralyzed by joy and they forget to perform their duties well. But rather we see that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had followers from all rungs of society. You had Maharaj Prataparudra, who was a king, and you have Kolaveta Sridhar, who was just an ordinary banana seller. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his pastimes, he demonstrated that the teachings of Bhagavad Gita is meant for everybody. And he is the personification of what Krishna explains in the, later on in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Susukam Kartum Avyayam, which means this process is very, very joyfully performed, and you can find the personification, the highest manifestation of that in the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And let's admit it, that's what everybody in this world is looking for. They want happiness. They just don't have faith that it's possible. That is the problem. When you tell people that's happiness is possible, they have no concept of what happiness is all about. As our previous acharyas have explained, as Prabhupada has explained, this is called the Kupa Manduka Nyaya. Kupa Manduka means, Kupa means the well, Manduka means the frog. And it's called the frog in the well. A frog in the well has no concept of the ocean. And I personally experienced this, that when we sit here in a class like this and talk the word ocean, talk the word well, I mean, ocean appears to be great, well appears to be small. But if we actually stand in front of an ocean and then use the word well and ocean, then we get the sense of, oh my God, I mean, the ocean is really huge. The concept of ocean is extremely huge. But when we talk in everyday conversation, we have some kind of, oh yeah, it's huge. But when we actually experience what an ocean is, it's huge. So like that, materialists, when they talk, when we talk to them, they think, oh, they may be experiencing, maybe there is some happiness, but I mean, maybe it's much greater than what we have. But they don't have an idea, they don't have a clue of the kind of, the extent of happiness that we can experience in Krishna consciousness. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Anandambudhi Varshanam Vardhanam, he says it's an ocean, and it is a ever-expanding ocean. First of all, if we stand in front of an ocean, it already looks ever-expanding. On top of that, it already looks so great. What does ever-expanding mean? It even beats our material conception of things. So, but all this is available by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He has come to teach us. How do we practice the teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita? So it is a very great chance that we have. And if we want to be free, Prabhupada's name is Abhaya Charan. Abhaya Charan means one who has become fearless by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is the first symptom that appears in our lives when we take to Krishna consciousness. We become free from fear. What kind of fear? Free from material anxiety. The moment we have material identifications, immediately there is anxiety. Immediately. It's like you cannot, just like they say, you cannot, if you lift one end of the stick, you also automatically lift the other end. So like that, the moment we have a material plan, the moment there is something material, immediately there is anxiety. It comes together. It's a package. You cannot have anything material without anxiety, however wonderful it may be. A young boy may think, oh, if I get this young girl, how wonderful it is. But that young girl comes with a whole package of anxiety. Or a businessman may think, if I become the richest man in the world, I mean, this would be so wonderful. But that richest man in the world also comes with a package of great anxiety. So there is nothing in this world which comes without anxiety. It is inbuilt into the system. So that is what Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, that the moment you look towards material life, immediately there is anxiety. So however, the wonderful thing about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita is that before I took to Krishna consciousness, I was reading through a lot of philosophical books and trying to understand both Eastern and Western philosophy. But I got into some kind of a schizophrenia, as they say. On the one hand, you have material life. Then on the other hand, they're talking about renouncing material life. And so I kind of felt, as Arjuna explains, like a riven cloud, neither here nor there. What does it all mean? I mean, if I'm spiritual, then can I pursue my responsibilities? So generally, this whole concept of spiritual life is a big mess. People don't have any clear concept of what spiritual life is all about. They may know that I'm not the body, but that is also a very, very vague concept. What is this? I'm not the body. But then they try to practice meditation for some time, and then they feel nice about meditation, and they may develop some bodily strength, but then they may get interested in sex life. Then they, I mean, it's a whole mess. So people are trying to constantly mentally adjust their material life, their spiritual life. It's a whole big endeavor altogether. And you talk to most of these people who are practicing the so-called spiritual life, they have no idea, I mean, of what they're doing. But there is something nice that they're feeling. And that nice feeling, they think, is spiritual life. So it is a great good fortune that the parampara, we have a parampara system, the parampara acharyas have clearly explained what is spirit, what is matter, and what is the difference between the two, and what are you supposed to do. Suppose we have this whole knowledge, and then we don't know what to do, then that becomes a very big problem. Okay, you have this knowledge, but you don't know how to implement that knowledge. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's greatest contribution is he has shown by his own life, this is how you lead. And he came with his own associates, and his associates have also demonstrated that, I mean, in their own lives, this is how we lead a life of Krishna consciousness. So anybody who wants to know how to lead a life of Krishna consciousness is there. And Prabhupada came and established this in this modern age. He taught us that there is nothing in this world which cannot be engaged in the service of Krishna. Of course, when I say nothing in the world, it comes with a little bit of a rider on it. It does not mean that alcohol can be somehow consumed, because everything can be used in the service of the Lord. It doesn't mean that, but in a general sense, I mean, everything in this world is a property of Krishna. So it has its, we can see its connection to Krishna, and we can engage that in the service of the Lord. So from the moment that I came to Krishna consciousness, when I read Prabhupada's books, I'm so relieved, because here was somebody finally telling how you can lead a life, how you can lead a non-schizophrenic spiritual life. That spiritual life is not one thing, material life is not one thing, and you lead spiritual life for some time, material life for some time, and then you try to maximize a little bit of spiritual life, minimize a little bit of material life, and it's not all these permutations and combinations. It is rather a very moment to moment, a very holistic, a very integrated pattern of life. That we understand from Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavad Gita, and he set up the International Society for Krishna Consciousness so that we can take advantage of this, the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is a fact, I mean, that when Lord Chaitanya, what he came to give us, or acharyas have explained, is Kevala Ananda Kanda. Kevala Ananda Kanda means it's simply happiness. Now that may sound like an exaggeration, but it is not. It is a fact. And it is not something which is experienced only by the exalted Paramahamsas, but rather even for a new practitioner of Krishna consciousness. He can practice Krishna consciousness till the stage he attains Krishna Prema in such a manner that his life is always blissful. It is possible. It is definitely possible. So so there's nothing which is exaggerated in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna says this process is susukam kartum ayoyam, that is very joyfully performed. Does not mean that maybe for 1 hour a day it is very joyful, but 23 hours is not so joyful. No, 24 hours it can be joyful, provided we do it in the right way. And it's not just for the advanced practitioners, even for the simple person, we just follow the teachings. But as Prabhupada explained, the boat may rock, but the boat won't tip if you are properly situated. So we may feel the pushings of material nature. We may feel the rocking a bit. We may feel a little bit of all these things. But if we are steady in the practice of Krishna consciousness, then we'll remain joyful. We won't tip over and suddenly fall into some depression or other things. So we should have this faith that simply by sticking to this process of Krishna consciousness, all perfection can be attained. And when I say sticking to this process of Krishna consciousness, it begins by a dedicated habit of studying and reading Prabhupada's books daily. Because as Prabhupada said, if you read my books, as I always say in my classes, if you read my books, you will never fall down. And that never fall down also means never fall down into unhappiness. So one of the most primary elements to keep our spiritual lives together, in fact the most primary element, is to read his books every day. And when you read his books, then you understand, I have to chant my rounds, I have to follow the principles, and all the different things are automatically there. So we should, at any point in time, the moment we begin to neglect this activity of trying to read Prabhupada's books on a daily basis, then immediately we encounter all kinds of difficulties and problems. So this is very good. That I really appreciate that Jeff Prabhu has tried to reintroduce what Prabhupada introduced, the Bhagavad Gita classes in the evening. So our movement is meant for Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vaishnava Seva. So it's a constant festival of these things. So we already had the Bhagavatam classes in the morning, which Prabhupada established, which is continuing in most temples. But some temples don't have evening classes, so it's a great benediction. It's a great act of compassion that Jeff Prabhu has shown to re-establish this. And I'm sure that all the Vaishnavas really appreciate the service that he's doing. And although there are 1, 2, 3, 4 people in this class right now physically, but I know that there is about 70 more people or 100 people on the internet. So, I mean, this is the Yukta Vairagya, where we're using the technology to broadcast the message of Bhagavad Gita, and so many people across the world are being benefited by these Bhagavad Gita classes. So I think I'll stop with that. And if there are any comments or questions. Any internet questions? Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.